The Guardian.
This month on The Guardian Book Club, the star of American short fiction, Laurie Moore, discusses her collected stories with John Mullen. She talks about whether short stories are inherently melancholy, her choices of tense, and why the collection is put together in reverse chronological order. But John Mullen began by asking her whether she plans her stories together as a collection, or whether she starts working on each one independently.
I only think of it as its own independent self, and it has no relationship to the other stories at all. And so to read them all together and to sort of forge a relationship is to discover all the writer's weaknesses and obsessions and problems. And if that's your task, then, you know, but the author would only want you to read.
Yeah.
Not even one a day, one every 4 days.
Right. One every 4 days. That's just very, you'd have to be quite a self-denying Laurie Moore fan to do that.
There are a lot of them.
And it's sort of what you describe is, when you're about writing them, is so much the opposite. You must, if you've read even one or two reviews of your stories, it's so much the opposite of what critics and reviewers do, which is always, maybe not with the whole collected stories, but with one particular volume, to find the common threads, to find the connections between the stories. It's as if the kind of critic's always kind of going against what the what the author actually
That's
is
That's always
about.
The case. Yeah. Critics are always against the author. That's, you know. But it's, you know, I have also reviewed books, and so I've dabbled in literary criticism myself, so I know that that's what happens, that in fact someone who hasn't written the stories can come along and see what these stories have in common and see the threads. But for the author, you know, for the most part, unless they've really organized the collection around a theme, for the most part, the stories are all independent of each other, coming out of a period of the author's life that wherein maybe there are particular obsessions and themes that concern the author, and so the author returns to them. But the author may not know this for decades.
Yeah. You as an author must have been conscious of people reading the thing as a whole, which is you've arranged them in reverse chronological order of their publication.
Right.
And, well, I wonder why you did that.
Well, someone asked me that last night, and I said, out of shame and embarrassment. there's something about one's early work that one always is trying to sort of hide from.
It's not just going back in time with your writing, but it's going back in time in a way in the sort of content of the stories
Sure. I think there's a stronger sense of place in the more recent ones. So you feel the Midwest and you feel a sense of place. The early ones are kind of, you know, unlocatable sometimes, except for the few that are set in New York. I think in the first collection there's only one that's in New York. I think that's right. Okay. And actually there's one story that's narrated by a middle-aged woman. And I wrote it when I was 23. So, I mean, that can, you know, that can happen.
Yeah. And what about the sort of the place thing, which you say has become more important? Obviously, it's perhaps the coincidence of the kind of place you live and work. But is there something that's peculiarly, I don't know, useful to a writer about the places that you write about and that you know?
Well, sometimes it's just you feel that the character is informed by the landscape and the society that's around them, and so you want to sort of particularize it, and I think I felt that more strongly in the recent stories than in the early stories, where I felt the characters were sort of more solitary.
Yeah. I mean, quite a lot of the characters in the recent stories seem to have a sense themselves. Either they don't come from the Midwest and they've found themselves there because of marriage or jobs or whatever, or they have some uh, disappointment or dissatisfaction which is expressed in the course of the stories. I mean, there's lots of brilliant little aphorisms about living in the Midwest, which reviewers take from your... Mm. They take it as if it's from you, but actually it's from your characters, you know, that sort of... Illinois, it makes me sarcastic to be here, says somebody. That's in You're Ugly Too.
Right.
This was in a faraway land. There were gyms, but no irony or coffee shops.
This was before I actually owned property in the Midwest. So there was a sense that I might not be there for very long. So there was that tone in some of the stories, but of course... Now I'm a taxpayer.
Yeah, so you think that's going to change, is it? That,
well, I think it has in the more recent ones. I think people are aren't that many recent ones, it's true. people are living in the Midwest in the more recent ones. They're there, yeah.
So that you don't, you haven't had kind of complaints from your students or colleagues that you give a satirical version of?
Not from my students and colleagues, but I do get complaints from others. Because the students and colleagues are also transients, you know, so they understand what that is to come into the Midwest or come into Wisconsin or come into a town that's not really where they're from and to try to make a life there either temporarily or long term. There are complaints from other people who feel like, oh, this is a typical, you know, transient stance that you know this fiction writer has taken.
I guess there's kind of quite a few protagonists who, in the course of the stories, you will find out, imagine or have imagined themselves having a more successful or a more glamorous kind of life, or you know that they found themselves in a kind of backwater.
I think in the collection Like Life, there are more of those stories where there's a sense of that being in the Midwest is a compromise of some sort. And so obviously that wouldn't sit well with Midwesterners, but it's fine with my colleagues because they all feel the same way.
Oh, right. I mean, I was just wondering if thinking about that sort of theme of sort of disappointment, whether it would be true to say, as I confess, tempted to say when I wrote about your stories in the newspaper a couple of weeks ago, that it's a sort of inherently melancholy form.
I've always felt that. I've always felt that it was. When I go to try to think of a happy short story, because sometimes my students say, what is this with all the short stories you're assigning us? They're all so sad. Where are the happy ones? And I think, yeah, where are the happy ones?
There's obviously reasons for melancholy sometimes in your stories because of the subject matter. But, I mean, just to linger on it for a moment longer. Your Wikipedia entry, actually you could, I think you could probably alter if you wanted to.
I don't know how to do that.
It just starts, it says Laurie Moore.
I'll have to talk to my publisher.
It
Maybe
says
they
some
can
dates, and then it says Laurie Moore. She writes frequently about failing relationships and terminal illnesses.
Oh, well.
That is the first sentence, I kid you not.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. That's sad.
I thought that was a sort of, but that was a kind of almost, you know, that was worthy of a Laurie Moore kind of character.
Do you know how to fix those Wikipedia entries?
I mean, there is quite a lot of illness, though, isn't there?
There is a lot of illness. Well, I guess I feel that's one of the big stories of life, you know, when you get sick and what happens when you get sick. But that's common in literature, actually. You know, some of the great stories are about illness, the death of Ivan Illich, and, you know, and there are a lot of them.
What, in short stories?
In short stories. That's a novella.
Yeah. So why do you think that is? I mean, in the course of a novel, which might be thought to include all sorts of the events in characters' lives, illness might be one thing that would happen. Do you think that there's a sort of special relationship between, I don't know, the short story and mortality as a...
I think one thing that a short story does is that it shows the way in which It goes into a character's life at a particular time, might just be a particular day, that is different from all the other days. And so it reveals what's typical for this character and also what is not typical and what will change. What is typical? Does that make sense? Mm. So that illness is classically something that will reveal what is typical for this character's world, but what will also alter it completely. Travel does that, you know, travel, illness, visitors. These are classic sorts of short story devices.
Do you think that's, I mean, maybe that's why, I don't know, divorce and separation are also kind of, they're good topics, aren't they? Because, I mean, the second story in the collection, which does indeed have weeping in it, Paper Losses, it's about the breakup of a marriage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess a divorce in Paper Losses, a divorce or the oncoming breakup of a marriage is a good sort of frame, just in, I'm talking in a sort of heartless narrative way for a short story, because it's the moment at which, or the time at which, to one of the characters, the whole narrative of their previous life just has changed, hasn't it?
Right. So you get to reveal the past, and you get to see the window opening on what the future will bring, sort of.
And so it's as if kind of all that went before was actually an untruth, really.
Well, you can see it that way if you. I mean, people see their lives that way, I suppose, too. They say, you know, my marriage was a sham if it ends badly. But, of course, you know, you can't let the one particular event of a narrative completely dictate the definition of what has come before, I don't think. So I don't think it's a sham.
No.
I just think it's the past.
Usually your stories are from the viewpoint of one particular character, occasionally told in the first person, but even usually, more often than not, they're not. But even then, they're usually from the point of view of one particular character. Sometimes you do something different. I mean, there was
sometimes I switch out of point of view, and I've had creative writing students come up to me and say, you're out of point of view here.
Yeah, do they?
Yes.
They think you've screwed up there.
And when they've appeared in magazines, I've had to fight for those little point of view glitches with the editor.
But I want, there were two other things I briefly wanted to ask about. The first is a sort of, you know, one of my dusty questions, which is the other thing that you do and the choice you make in telling a story is a choice between what tense to tell it in. And I think I'm right in saying that, especially in recent stories, especially in Birds of America, there's lots of stories in the present tense, including Dance in America.
Dance in America, right.
Charades.
Oh, yeah, that's
Beautiful
right.
Beautiful Grade. What You Want to Do Fine.
Oh, God. I forgot about all these.
And kind of what the story which maybe is your best-known single story, People Like That Are Only People Here, Canonical Babblings.
Right, I forgot that was.
So that's quite a few in that collection.
But it's not the majority. It's like 5 out of 12.
Okay. But then in the previous collection, as represented in this volume, there's not a single one.
In the present tense.
In the present tense.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Boy, you've done your homework, and I really haven't.
So what? You know, but maybe,
there's,
I mean,
not a
asking
single
you,
one.
Asking, because it's probably a story that quite a few people here know well. Thinking about People Like That are the only people here. Why was it important that was written in the present tense? This is a story many of you will be probably familiar with, about, told from the point of view of a mother, who's called the mother, whose baby, who's called the baby, is diagnosed with liver cancer, malignant liver cancer, at the beginning of the story. And the story follows the medical consultations and the treatment, but also the thoughts and fears and reflections of the mother.
The present tense, at least as I understand it, is a kind is a tense of caughtness, where you don't have the perspective to tell a story really from beginning to its conclusion. You're telling it as in a kind of ongoingness. And so the characters are caught in a situation, and that's when you should use the present tense, when there's actually not a good resolution to the situation, or there's not a known resolution. It's not told from a place where the story really knows how this situation ends. The story doesn't really know how this situation ends, but it's telling the story in this kind of eternal present. It's just so that everybody's kind of caught there and the reader's caught there as well.
Right. I mean, the other thing I wanted to ask you about quickly before I throw it open was sex in the stories.
There's no... Is this sabbing?
Well, there is... There, debarking sort of has...
Oh, that... Yeah,
yeah, that sort of has some sex in.
Yeah.
But you say there's no sex in the story... But
I'm surprised I didn't win that bad sex award, sex scene award. Isn't there one?
It's not. There is, but it's got to be bad. It's got to be.
That's a bad.
It's not. No, it's not. It? Have you read any of the shortlisted?
No, there.
No,
it doesn't.
Well,
it's not up
you're
there.
You're not in the game. I can tell
you.
Oh,
no. Gee. I thought it was okay.
But you kind of you notice that scene in Debarking because, as you say,
because of the bad
there's no
sex.
There's no sex in the stories, but. It's sort of what drives lots and lots of the stories. And yet these books happen a lot in the minds of particular people and tell you private things, unsayable things, but they stop at the bedroom door. I want to give people the chance to ask some questions. A lady here.
Yes.
You were talking about short stories being inherently melancholic in lots of examples, but I find, I think everyone else, there's a lot of humour in your work. Just wanted to ask, well, have you always set out to write with humour and how you think humour informs your work as well?
Well, I think humour is just part of the texture of life. I do think the underlying, you know, facts of human existence are really kind of harsh. And don't you agree?
Well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're all going to die right there, you know? I hate to sound like I'm in the freshman dorm. But you realize, people, we're all going to die. I mean, there's some really hard, you know, difficult things about life, but the texture of it has all kinds of fun and humor and consolation. In it, and so I'm interested a lot in the way that people amuse each other, and they work very hard to amuse each other, which I think is, a lucky thing and a generous thing. And I do try to get that down. I do have the great privilege of having a lot of amusing friends, and have always had amusing friends, so I get to write down what they say sometimes.
Yes, a gentleman at the back.
We've talked a lot about your short stories, and this might be breaking the rules a little bit, but I kind of wanted to ask you about your novel and the previous novel. And you said some really interesting things about the form, the short story, and I suppose one of the other things I was thinking was about how, because your style lends itself to kind of compression, particularly kind of compression of character and in a really kind of pithy and precise way, I wondered if moving into the bigger space of a novel, that was kind of something that you'd always wanted to do, or that actually writing a novel had been really liberating, sort of coming from writing short stories, and that you've got sort of room to kind of go after the, I don't know, instead of one defining moment, several, or sort of bigger emotional kind of game, or whatever it is that kind of interests you, I suppose. And whether you wanted to write more novels. Because I think you should.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. You know, I loved keeping company with the narrator and protagonist of this novel that I finished last year, and I would like to write other novels. I needed to write this novel rather than stories, because I wanted to take a character into a complicated situation and have a long period of time go by in which she encounters a number of things. So I just needed the space of a novel, and I knew that from the beginning. I just needed more time and more space. And I, in the end, I was sort of reluctant to let go of the book because I was kind of attached to her. And I thought, well, who's going to be home, you know, in my study if I turn this book in? You know, it's just going to be an empty study. I'm going to come home every day with nobody there on my desk. So I enjoyed keeping company with her. I hope to have a similar experience again. I had it somewhat with Who Will Run the Frog Hospital, but it, you know, it was a shorter book. And actually, frankly, because so much of it was focused on those 15-year-old girls, I mean, it moves back and forth between adulthood and these adolescents. But in the end, I was sort of glad to be done with those girls. Whereas Tassie, who is telling a story, she's in her 20s, and she's telling a story about when she was 20, turning 21, doesn't seem as irritating to me as those 15-year-old girls did. But, you know, there's only so much time you can spend with teenagers.
Yes, there's several here. So, two ladies then and a gentleman. Yeah?
Could you say a little bit about how you write, whether you write from the beginning to the end, and where the funny remarks your friends make come into it? And if you write sort of every day?
I try to write every day, or at least take notes, but it's not possible to write in a real way every day for me. But I do my best. And I usually start right at the beginning. I really feel that both with a novel and with a short story, that the first lines are very key for establishing a voice and for knowing, you know, where you're going. I often don't have the ending in mind until I'm about a third of the way through, and then I'll jump ahead and write the ending. And then it's a matter of sort of connecting it. But, you know, with short stories, the ending especially is very, very key. It's an end-oriented form, and so the ending has to shine back over the story and give it its meaning, really. So I often have the ending written way before the middle. Is there something I left out?
Out how you exploit
friends.
Your friends.
How I
pursues.
Exploit my friends. I can't. I just try to recall things that I'm hoping they've forgotten they said.
So it's things people say. I mean, it's not sort of characters. And
no, it's not
you don't
characters.
Do that thing which lots of novelists, some admit they do it, but lots of them do it, of putting in, especially perhaps for minor characters, oh, I need a school teacher, yes.
No,
I need an aunt.
I haven't done that, really. The most that I've done that is sort of a pastiche of different people. But I've never taken someone completely and put them in. Although I have to say for the story Real Estate, that married couple, Terrence and Ruth, for some reason, to get going with that and to imagine it and even the sobbing was inspired by Bill and Hillary Clinton. not that I know them at all. No, I was thinking of a philanderer because there was this famous story in America about Bill Clinton being, you know, crying when one of his mistresses broke up with him.
Yes, yes.
And so I thought of the wife as having a sisterly relationship to him and standing by him and through it all.
Oh God, how interesting! But it's based on Bill Clinton.
It's not really supposed to be him, but it was part of what I was thinking when I was creating the character. So that's what I mean by pastiches and stuff, right?
So it's mostly dialogue. It's little slices of
right.
There's a lady just in front of you, I think.
I just wanted to say something about your use of language, which I just think is fantastic, all the sort of puns and similes and allusions, just all the way through. And I was thinking just immediately for some reason of the story that just goes, ha, 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 ha.
That's the same one, that's real estate. Yeah.
Is that real estate? Yeah, yeah. For about 3 pages. And I just,
two
just,
pages of ha, 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 ha.
I kind of wondered if anybody's ever compared you to Gertrude Stein. Perhaps a self-reflective and rather humorous Gertrude Stein, which is
No, nobody
ever has. No. Just the idea of using language in that way seemed to be... kind of, you know, repetitive and
right. You know. Somebody did say to me very early on when I was in graduate school, she said, all of your stories work on repetitions. She was seeing how the words and the images repeated. I thought, she's onto me. But I think a lot of writers work that way. But repetition, yeah, I'm aware of it most of the time.
Do you remember why it's got 2 pages of ha 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 ha?
No, all I can remember is laughing, actually.
Yeah. Well, remember, I mean, it says...
I could read that part out loud. Yeah.
Well, can you read the little bit that leads up to it?
Yeah,
it's on page 221.
Okay. Yeah. What it is, what the ha ha ha's are basic... Well, you'll see as I read it.
Why don't you start from the beginning? Yeah,
okay.
It's only a couple of paragraphs.
Okay. The story is called Real Estate. It must be, Ruth thought, that she was going to die in the spring. She felt such inexplicable desolation then, such sludge in the heart. Felt the season's mockery, all that chartreuse humidity in her throat like a gag. How else to explain such a feeling? She could almost burst. Could one burst with joylessness? What she was feeling was too strange, too contrary, too isolated for a mere emotion. It had to be a premonition, one of being finally whisked away after much boring, flailing, and flapping, and the pained, purposeless work that constituted life. And in spring, no less, a premonition of death, a rehearsal, a secretary's call to remind of the appointment. Of course, it had always been in the spring that she discovered her husband's affairs. But the last one was years ago, and what did she care about all that now? There had been a parade of flings. In the end, they'd made her laugh. Ha, 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 ha. And then it goes on for a long time. So what it is a kind of scream. It's a scream.
It's funny, I did read a review that said that sentence that you read out from the first paragraph. She could almost burst. Could one burst with joylessness? Which said only Laurie Moore could have written that could, sentence.
Could burst contemplate with bursting with joylessness.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Lady at the...
Well, I have a question about Tiger Woods. this is a serious question. You mentioned Bill Clinton and his affairs sort of providing background inspiration. I don't understand the popular concern, the way heroes have to be built up, the fantasy of a marriage. And I just thought you might have something interesting to say about these months and months of coverage. We've suffered them over here in Britain as well as you have in the States. And it just seems to me so completely... You know, so what else is new that
about Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah, I'm totally perplexed by it. It really makes me think, are we invading another country right now? Is that why the airways are taken over by Tiger Woods? You really wonder what's really going on in the world that's being covered up. You do wonder. You do wonder. I don't know.
So, would you like to... We have one more question. I think we've got time for one more. So, would you like to bring the curtain down?
A lot of your imagery is very poetic. Do you read a lot of poetry? Do you like poetry?
I love poetry. I used to read more of it than I do. I used to read more of everything than I do, but now. But, yes, I do read poetry.
Do you write any at all?
No. There was a brief period, I think, when I was 19, where I decided I was now a poet. I was done with short stories and I was going to write poems. And since I was editor of the literary magazine in college, I published my own poems. They were terrible. They're absolutely terrible. So I haven't written any.
One of your characters writes slightly dodgy poetry. I can't remember which one now.
Oh, probably a couple.
No, she does. She performs it. She performs it in... Who is it? There's a poet in one of your stories.
Oh, that's an actual poem. That's an Edna St. Vincent Millay poem. That's slightly dodgy.
No, you've given it to her. I thought it was dodgy.
Well, which are we talking? We're talking about the juniper tree?
Sorry?
The juniper tree where she
recites
a poem?
No, not the juniper tree.
Oh, well, that's an Edna Millay poem.
No. What's the poem? What's the story with the poet in?
Oh, yes. The Jewish Hunter.
Thank you. That's reasonably dodgy poetry.
That's terrible poetry, but
thank
it was
you.
Fun to write.
Yeah. There'll be lots of people who listen to the podcast and just stop at that earlier point. You know. My colleagues. No,
that was fun to write.
So I'd just like to thank Laurie so much for coming.
Oh, well, thank you.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.